Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHNB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalline.
All right, good morning, Coastsiders. It's Friday, March 27th, 2026, and it's time for some Coastal Windage. Good morning, I'm Ruben.
Good morning, I'm Crystalline.
All right, and with us today in studio, we did the research for the fifth time. Can you believe that? We need like some special like blazer or something, you know,
like the SNL.
Yes, exactly. For Kata Gomes from Muchiate Indigenous Land Trust and a Rimatush elder. Good morning, Kata.
Hoshatuhi, greetings.
I was going to say that exactly, but people know that my pronunciation is horrible, but that sounded lovely, and I know you've been working on reviving the Rimatush language and working on your skills with that, too. And, man, you sound good.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we just celebrated last week our third year of our Shali Rimatush language school.
Okay, we're going to definitely talk about that on the in the back half of the show, but that's really an important element of this. All right, we'll save that. That's a tease. It's, in the business is called a tease because you want to stick around for the back half of this show when we're going to talk to Kata about the Rimatush tribe and what's going on with Muchiate. Okay. Other things that you might want to be listening for on the show today. KHMB, the legendary Half Moon Bay radio station, it's official, KHMB has outlasted CBS Radio.
Whoa.
Yep. CBS Radio, no longer. KHMB, still standing. So we'll get into that. And no permit for you, Mid-Coast. That's an interesting development. We'll talk about development on the Mid-Coast, but we'll also talk with Takata about development, or hopefully lack of, in areas of Pacifica. Okay, and then, as we said, we'll have our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Kata in the back half of the show. Okay, here's the air quality report. But before we get to that, if you want to call in about any of those topics or other topics that we might be covering, or actually topics that we're not covering.
Yeah, that's looking at you, email person.
Yeah, well, we do have a few. I mean, I just feel so bad about they just keep pouring in. But it's hard to fit everything in an hour, especially when I end up talking about how we can't fit everything in an hour.
Yeah, but I mean specifically that email that said they didn't like our topics.
Which one was that? Like, the interns love, you know, poking me, so it seems like every email is some kind of beef of some kind. So if you want to call in, oh yeah, we should give the number. If you want to call in, 650-477-1244. Yes, I'm saying it slow because I know it's a new number. It's up on the Coastal Windage webpage if you want to go there and check that out. It's a couple weeks behind, but because we have some technical things that we're doing at the website, some changes. So got 2 weeks worth of content to get up there, but the new phone number is there, 650-477-1244. Okay, do it. Call. All right. Air quality report. Last week,
it
was in the 40s, yeah, which is still actually in the, like, amazing range. But, you know, we're used to teens and single digits and the beautiful Buenos Aires. And so to have it in the 40s seems like, you know, such a come down. But it's still in the incredible range. Mm-hmm. But today we're back to normal. 10, and remember, 0 to 50 is incredible. 51 to 100 is all right, and over that is not good. We're at 10 in El Granada, 10 in Half Moon Bay, 13 in Redwood City, 18 in Santa Cruz, and down in Venice Beach, California. Yes, we're still trying to unload, I mean, give away these windage bucks. So you want one of these windage bucks, so call in if you know why Venice Beach, California is on our air quality report list. 70 today in Venice Beach, California. If you know where Venice Beach is and it's 70, which is still technically in the good range, you're like, oh, no surprise there. If you know where Venice Beach is. All right. And if you don't, look it up and listen and maybe win, call in for some windage bucks at 650-477-1244. You notice I said the number really fast when we're giving something away.
Yeah.
But when I want people to call and talk to us or Kata, it's very slow. Okay. So now we're, I would say this week, last week we talked about the heat dome and it was legitimately hot last week. I would say this week we're heat dome adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's warm and just like really heavenly. It's perfect. Like it's not hot and it's, but it's even warm enough for me. So I would say heat dome adjacent. A little bit of wind, like just a little bit.
But I'm pulling a Reuben. I'm getting mad because I'm supposed to have a grand opening on this upcoming Thursday and it says it's going to rain.
I know.
Why couldn't it rain for you? I'd rather it
well,
have rain. No,
well, I see. I'm like, why could it not rain for both of us?
Yes.
You know, no, I.
Actually, my apologies. I've been praying for rain.
Okay.
Can you
like stay that pray for a minute? Just...
Like, can you just pray for rain through Wednesday? I just need Thursday, free and clear.
Well, isn't that the forecast that is earlier in the week, the possibility?
Oh,
right?
When I looked yesterday, it said that it was going to be raining on Thursday, too. 50% chance.
Okay, we'll change that.
Thank you.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
No problem.
Oh, okay. Just because Frank and I are super old, I'm just going to throw this out because we mentioned rain. Back in the 50s, the 1950s, in Major League Baseball, the St. Louis Cardinals had a couple of pitchers, Warren Spahn and Johnny Sane, I think, and they were really good. And so there was a slogan that the other teams would say, like if they were playing a doubleheader and those two guys were pitching, they would say, it's Spahn and Sane and pray for rain, because if we have to play them, we're going to lose both of those games. So that's your old-timey baseball reference there from the 1950s. Any show that mentions Warren Spahn, like you've made it, you've done something in radio. Okay. So it's been nice. It's really, really nice. But it's the coast side. So you know it can't last. It just like I've seen Carl lurking out there a couple of days where I thought like, oh, this is the day. There was even one day, I want to say it was Tuesday. It was all gray. Like I live kind of right on the fog line in El Granada, where to my east it's sunny and I can see up the hill and sunny, but looking west towards the ocean, it's usually foggy. Literally at my backyard line. And so that morning I looked out and it was gray out towards the harbor and I could see fog, kind of wisp of it moving inland. And I thought, oh, well, there goes the heat dome. But it rallied and later in the day, like the heat had burned off the fog and it was back to the way it's been. So Carl's out there lurking out there just waiting for a moment to come in, and it's going to happen any day. I guess rain early next week. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, which is fine. It's good.
I mean, we do need this. We talked about it last week with the heat dome thing. If this level of temperature was
consistent
and lasted for weeks every year, yes, then folks that are worried about fire, I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. And even this heat spell right now, yes, it's definitely drying things out, but the fog will be there and it will come back and it will... We just don't live in the high, regardless of what the maps say or the insurance companies say. And even people that have called in and said, no, or Greg Diegas, there was a fire in like 1940 or 1908 or something like that. So we don't, I'm not buying the, like, this is a major fire danger area. Okay. But what I am buying is that the wildflower bloom is here. Explore local nature, the nonprofit venture of our friend Mike Kahn, who we had on the show on February 6, 2026, if you want to listen to that, is featuring seven great hikes throughout San Mateo County in the new Spring Wildflowers Guide, including some gems in Half Moon Bay and the coast sites. You want to go check that out at explorelocalnature.com. Get a subscription to that because Mike has these seasonal guides that come out. We talked to him when he was on the show. We talked about his waterfalls guide. So he finds these like lesser known trails and places and has a little guide in there. And the thing about the wildflower guide is we, Coastal Windage, sponsored this year's wildflower guide because I appreciate nature and want to help good ventures like Mike and explore local nature. So we did sponsor that. If you see our logo on there, that's us. Yes. And speaking of wildflowers, Sunday, April 26th.
Wildflower Day.
What is even today? We're in March still? Yes. Oh, my gosh. So that's a month from now. Wow. Interns are on it. I'm like, go and find some stuff related to wildflowers. They found this. Sunday, April 26th is Half Moon Bay State Beach's annual Coastal Wildflower Day from 10 to 2 at Half Moon Bay State Beach and Venice Beach.
Oh.
Venice Beach.
I was wondering if that was the tie-in.
A family-friendly event that celebrates the diversity of the coastal ecosystems and thriving wildflower habitats. And it definitely has been seeming a wildflower spring with the... It seems like we had some rain at the beginning of the year, and then we have this heat, and it's just like... Boom, right?
And then can I put out a little caution? Right, because, you know, we start seeing lots of super blooms and all of these things. And for the locals, hopefully you can help spread the word because I don't think that you guys are the perpetrators. But if you see a beautiful wild flower or the yellow flowers blooms on farmland and it says keep out, please keep out. The number of people that I see going and having their, like, Instagram moments in somebody's field, and a lot of times those things have been allowed to bloom or purposely planted to help rehabilitate soil for its next crops. So people trampling around on that farmland just because it looks beautiful is detrimental. And A, it is somebody's private property, and many of them put signs up that say keep off, and people are still out there doing it, which is just incredibly rude and terrible. There are some farms that do allow it, and they ask for donations to help, you know, with their farm, which I think is fantastic. So if you really want to go out into a field, check out any of the ones up and down Highway 1 that are allowing it, but please stay off the ones that are not allowing it.
You mean the people that pull right off to the side of the road here, right at Highway 1 and, yes, and Main Street, and then just walk out there and are laying down? And but your Insta, like the Insta tops all. I mean, everything's okay if it's for Insta, right?
No.
You can go and dip your toe in Old Faithful at Yellowstone. You can go up and, you know, get a selfie with a bison or something, right? I mean, if it's for Insta, anything goes.
Not for good people.
I don't know what I'm talking about, except because I don't have Insta, except I do know people, and that's all I need to know, unfortunately. Okay. Back to the Wildflower Day. So local food vendors, performances by Half Moon Bay High School Marching Band, Lighthouse String Band, and Coastside Country. Man, they are everywhere.
Coastside, so awesome.
They're going to be at Grad Night auction later this month.
They're just so fun. It's just such a good energy.
Yep, they really found something there. A native plant sale, raffle drawings, complimentary face painting, guided walks, 20 community organizations. Will Muchia Te be there?
I have participated in the past with their propagation of native plants.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. This event is free. However, day use parking is $10. Mm-hmm. However, both of these beaches are right along the coastal trail. So think about walking or riding your bike and save the $10 and feel good about, get a little exercise and feel good about, you know, that you're not polluting. Unless, of course, you're riding an e-bike, in which case you may not think you're polluting, but where did that electricity come from? This is a beef I have with the e-bikes. A bicycle is a perfect creation that requires no external power source and pollutes in no way. But when you put a battery on it, that electricity is generated somewhere, somehow. And so there is an environmental impact of e-bikes. It's just been removed. You don't have a tailpipe and you're not breathing in smoke directly. But that smoke is blowing into the northern Arizona plateau out of the Navajo coal generating plant there or other places. Okay. Related to the wildflower thing, we have an email from a listener here. I can never remember if we've done these emails or not. So, Crystalline, call me on this if this sounds familiar. Dendrocron? Is that? Mm-hmm. No? Okay. So, this is from listener Dendrocron. Windage sponsoring the spring wildflower guide. Oh, okay. Great. Have you no shame? This is what I'm talking about. Okay. This is like, see these folks here? They love to push buttons. Have you no shame? No, we don't. That's how we're able to do this show every week. Don't you think that sponsoring the business of one of your business partners is a blatant conflict of interest? I'm lost already. Especially when you then interview him on the show to shamelessly promote his startup. Wow. Does the law not apply to anything anymore? No wonder this country is coming apart. All our basic tenets and beliefs are beholden to the almighty dollar. Another thing. Oh, my. Okay. I know. God. We had somebody on promoting something. Think of the children. What have we done?
We promote businesses all the time.
I know. And this email is literally like 6 pages. And another thing, I just stopped there. Yikes. I don't need another thing. That was enough. So we had Mike on. I love what he's doing. He said, we're looking for sponsors. We sponsored. We're not a business partner. We just sponsored him so that he could keep his enterprise going and move it along and support outdoorsy stuff. I don't think that's a conflict of interest or anything. But this reminds me of a saying my dad used to say, that like, this is a no win. This is basically a metaphor for no win. And I'm going to paraphrase this to be a little gentler on the radio. But he would always say, whenever I was mentioning a no win situation, he would say, oh, yeah, Senator. As if he's like, you know, you're the Senator, microphone. Senator, when did you stop kicking your dog? And the first few times, I'm just like, what? His point being, if somebody asks you a question like that, you're kind of screwed. You can't win either way. Because if you say, I've never kicked my dog. I don't kick my dog. You're giving credibility to the very statement by saying the words back and acknowledging that, you know, like acknowledging the question.
It's the Barbara Streisand effect.
Yes, exactly. That you would respond to it. Just by responding to it, you have given it life.
Yeah.
Even though your response is in the negative, no. You're still giving it credibility by responding to it. And if you don't respond, then it looks like you're avoiding it and like you've got something to hide. So you really can't win. That's how I feel about this email from Dendrocron. No. In fact, we mentioned that we were going to sponsor the Wildflower Guide. And we followed through and we're proud of it. And thank you, Mike. And I guess thank you, Dendrocron, for listening. Okay. Just going to come back to something. $21.99 for a six roll pack of paper towels at Safeway. $21.99. Not the jumbo rolls, regular rolls, just six of them. $21.99. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Prices are going up because of the idiotic tariff situation and the stupidity of the war in Iran. I get that. Yet, and I know you're gonna stop me on this, but this feels a little COVID-y in the sense that, again, with COVID, I get it. Expenses, businesses have problems. They're worried about, but I feel like during COVID, like the whole price increase, there was a lot of padding there beyond the actual increase in expenses. People were finding ways to pad, adding 20% service charge, some of which are still there 5 years after COVID is over. You still see some of these. So people were padding. I feel like with the general inflation and like things are out of control, there's a lot of, especially by the big corporations. Yes. I don't know about small businesses. They got real problems.
Well, because the small businesses get hit with those inflated prices too. Yeah, so I will agree that the larger corporations, on average, I do believe their prices are not fair. And if it still holds true, and I'm not sure, but the last time we had like a big inflation, the CEO of Arizona Iced Tea came out and people were asking like, well, how come Arizona Iced Tea is still 99 cents for the big can like it was in the 90s? Like, you've never risen the price of the can while everything around you is going up. And why haven't you? And his response was, for what we do, because we own our factory and our this and our that, our prices do not increase in a way that requires us to increase the cost of the can. So we will always try to do our best to keep our costs low. And as long as we can, we will never increase the price of Arizona Iced Tea. And that was just such a respectful answer. And I think a lot of corporations have lost sight. And I am sorry, I will never agree with CEOs making $40 million when the lowest person on their, you know, roster is barely making $33,000 for a family of four. You know, that's never going to be okay. And them trying to charge $21 for paper towels. $21.99 for paper towels is absolutely ridiculous. And us as consumers are having to pay that, but also small businesses have to pay that.
Yeah. I mean, to Arizona Iced Tea, I like the statement, but no, just as no man is an island, no corporation or business is an island. Like, that tea's got to get from the production plant to the distribution places to the store somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume, if it hasn't already, I would assume that at some point it will go up. But the sentiment was nice, that it was like, it will not go up until we are forced to have it go up. And it wasn't just like, oh, well, everything else around us. Well, if a cola is $2 per tiny can, then, well, of course we could get $3.50 for our big can. Like, that wasn't his sentiment or mentality, and that is respectful.
I just think the American consumer's gotten to the point where you could charge, they're going to complain about it, but you could charge anything for anything, and people are going to still be buying it.
But in some cases, they don't have a choice.
I agree. But there's literally, it feels like there's nothing that is affordable right now. Even like fast food, which used to be cheap, go for a few bucks, go and like, you know, fill yourself up. You're looking at 15, 20 bucks for like almost a single person's meal at fast food. Although I haven't eaten fast food since 2008.
But also the weird, scary thing about that too is at this point, eating out is costs. It used to be that eating out was the luxury because it cost more than making food at home. And that is no longer the case. Eating out and eating at home are roughly the same amount in a lot of instances.
Okay, that's a deal breaker because, yeah, like you said, eating out, like, okay, maybe once a week or once a month we'll go eat out and it's a special thing and it costs extra. But at home we're making, you know, rice and meals with components that we put together, and the components are cheaper to buy as components, and then you make your meal yourself. And if the case is now that that is as expensive as going out.
Well, and the reason that it's gotten more expensive too is because in conjunction with the cost of inflation has also been shrinkflation. So it used to be, if you spent, let's just say, $80 on groceries, it didn't just only get you one meal because your bag of broccoli had two full meals of broccoli in it. And that bagged salad, I literally watched a video last night in my doom scroll of a gal who was so incensed that just the bag of salad that she bought didn't even fill a salad bowl at that point. It had gotten so small. So it's not that people, the reason why the cost of grocery foods are on par with eating out is because you're just getting so much less than you used to, plus the cost has gone up.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about, the sneaky taking advantage that the corporations are doing. And like, not only are the prices going up, the portions are going down, so you're paying more for less. Yeah. You know, like, and they don't need, and it's not like corporations are failing in this country. It's not like they're barely scraping by. Record-making profits. You know, the stock
market. CEOs with $40 million annual paychecks.
Yep. Stock market at record levels, and yet still laying people off, still jacking up prices.
Yeah.
No. All right, let's get to this quickly before our break. KHMB, the mighty Half Moon Bay radio station, has outlasted CBS Radio. Kata, do you listen to, do you have a, like a little, not a computer, do you have a, like a radio in your house with the like, turn the button, you know, to, and a tuner that you listen to the radio?
I have one in my house, but I haven't listened to it for a very long time.
What about in your car? Do you have one in your car?
I don't. I have one in my car, and I don't listen to it.
Oh, okay.
I have one in my house, and it's actually also doubles as my toaster.
Okay. No, that's the old school, right? When you have one on your kitchen counter. Like my dad used to go to the baseball games. He had a little transistor radio with the like single earbud at the time with the connected cable, and he would listen to the baseball broadcast while we were at the game. I still listen to the radio. When I drove to Alaska and back in 2022, that's 10,000 miles. I took no external audio content at all. All I had was the AM/FM radio in my van. And for, if you've ever been up there, for long stretches of time, there's nothing but static. But I would while away the many hours and thousands of miles of driving, just slowly moving the tuner. And every once in a while, there'd be some talking or some music. I'd listen to that until that crackled, faded away into static, and then on to the next one. Radio's amazing. I love broadcast radio, but it's going away. Earlier this month, CBS News announced it was cutting 6% of its staff, including the entire CBS News radio division. The network will end on May 22nd after nearly 100 years of operation, and all CBS News radio positions will be cut. This, I know people like, you know, yawn. Young people are like, what? Yeah, no, this is a big deal. This CBS Radio began in 1927 and is the last of the original three radio networks to remain in operation after NBC Radio Network and Mutual Broadcasting System ended in 1999. Network leaders said the network layoffs were necessary to address the rapid changes affecting the media industry, which has led to cuts across broadcast, cable, print, and digital publications as audiences become more fragmented and streaming platforms rise and AI platforms impact search traffic. Yeah, whatever. I'm not even buying this economic argument as 1 minute, really? 1 minute? Okay. iHeartMedia chairman Bob Pittman shared this on his podcast, I guess, which is ironic. Nielsen's came out with a study of radio's return on investment, which shows a 6-to-1 return on investment for every dollar invested in radio, which by most estimates is much greater than television or digital. What's happened to radio is that they've done a poor job of monetizing what they have. And what I see here is this is my cult of technology rant. It's not about that radio can't be profitable or that isn't. It's just it's not the shiny new toy. And so in the cult of technology, shiny new toy must be forced down everybody's throat and everybody must adopt shiny new toy. And everything that isn't shiny new toy, like a landline that worked great for 100 years with no problems, we got to get rid of that technology and adopt the shiny new toy. And everybody must gulp it down and not question.
I also think that radio like stations have not, and KHMB does this well, have not continued to stay in the community. It used to be that, you know, at the mall, the radio station would have a day and this and that. I will give a huge plug to radio host Marcus D, because he is always in the community, and he is probably the main reason that we all know that exists, and like kudos to him. But a lot of stations don't do that.
All right, yeah, I agree. Okay, are we going to commercial break now, Frank? All right, we'll go to commercial break. Let's see. We weren't quite done with this segment, but you know what? We'll roll it to next week because we never got to talk about how why are you mentioning this, Ruben? CBS Radio, that doesn't have anything to do with the Coast Side. But we'll get back to that maybe next, not next week. You'll be here with your guest next week. I'll be out maybe the week after that. All right, let's take a commercial break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Kata Gomes of Muchia Te Indigenous Land Trust.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side. 100.9 KHMB. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Warren Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
Okay, and we're back. Just a reminder, the Half Moon Bay High School Theater Department's presentation of Hadestown concludes this weekend. Friday shows tonight, 7. Tomorrow night, 7. Sunday at 2. You don't want to miss it. The theater department at Half Moon Bay High School does an amazing job. One thing I love about the high school's musicals is they usually have a live band, but I've heard for Hadestown it's recorded soundtrack. So that's not as great for me because I love the live nature and seeing the kids performing and singing and then looking over and seeing kids playing the music. And when they play the music, what one was it that they did? Mamma Mia. Oh. And they did Mamma Mia. The band that year doing the songs was just
spectacular.
Yeah. As the kids would say, off the chain, right? Is that what the kids would say?
Sure.
Like 90s, 25 years ago?
90s kid.
Really? It's been that long? Well, you're a 90s kid.
And that's from my era.
Ouch. Okay. Kata, what did we say back in the day? I can't, that's rad. Yeah, that's what I would have said. That's rad, dude. Okay. All right, we're here with Kata Gomes. Again, we mentioned, we had the interns do the research fifth time. April 11th, 2025, May 17th, 2024, April 21st, 2023, and the most infamous show in Coastal Windage history, April 26th, 2024. We did about 25 minutes of a show, and then the entire power, in the entire building went off, and we just had to call it a day and come back and do it again, which we did a couple of weeks later.
Mm-hmm. It was memorable.
Yeah. Okay. Let's regroup for people who somehow may have missed those other shows. Kata, what is Muchia Te and what's it all about?
Through my mother's family, I have documented lineage to three tribes here in Central California. And Muchia Te is a matriarch of one of our tribes, the Ramaytush of the entire San Francisco Peninsula. And she's documented at the mission in San Francisco in 1782.
Dolores Mission?
Yes. And not only did the mission document my family's indigenous names, but also the name and location of our village site of Tmigtok along Calera Creek, which is now known as Pacifica. And I have started a nonprofit Indigenous Land Trust, a women-led 501c3, that we are focusing on cultural revitalization. Because of the multiple traumas that have been imposed on us since colonization, there's been a intentional disconnect from our culture. And so we're actively working to try to resolve that and to let the community know we are still here. And for 100 years, the academics at UC Berkeley have been claiming that we are extinct. And we have documented our lineage and have proven for 100 years the academics have been wrong. And
what?
We are still here.
Okay.
And we are actively bringing back our culture. Because we feel that there's a lot of benefits from the culture that wasn't respected 300 years ago. And if we had had acknowledgement and preservation and respect for the culture that had existed here as a community for thousands of years that respected multiple lifestyles and species that thrived and was a healthy, thriving community with a lot of respect. And if that had been respected and carried on, we wouldn't be in the crisis we currently are in.
Speaking of the crisis that we're currently in at a general level, from the highest levels of our government right now, there seems to be some real negativity towards, you know, anybody who's not in a certain demographic or thinks a certain way. Are you feeling that at Mucciate right now?
We are, as an intertribal group, we are. Us here locally, not so much because we aren't financially dependent on government support for that. And so we've actively sought other sources of support. And the growing amount of community support has been really heartwarming and overwhelming. And so we personally, in our little group, have been shielded a lot by that, but not completely. And it is very detrimental to bigger tribal groups who are federally recognized and state recognized.
So Rimatush is not federally recognized?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Because our numbers are so small due to the multiple forms of genocide that have taken place and continue to take place.
How many known Rimatush are there that you're, you know, like, do you have a registry that you keep?
No. In fact, Mucciate and her husband, Yuktus, they had four children. Their four lines of descent, of descendants, are the only known living tribal members of the entire peninsula because of the multiple genocides that have taken place here.
Do you think there's some potential members out there that haven't been found yet?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, there can be other tribal members because of the multiple generations of disconnect that have happened here. People aren't aware of their lineage. The push for assimilation as a survival tactic. You know, during the gold rush, our very first governor, Peter Burnett, declared an era of extermination with some of the first laws in California making it legal to murder indigenous people of California. And the state was paying bounties for native body parts. And so at that time, entire villages were being massacred, and the state would reimburse the murderers for their bullets that were used.
So how many Rimatush are known?
That is really hard to say for me. I would guess probably less than 1,000.
So does that feel lonely, or does that feel like,
yes,
a community to you?
Yes, it feels very much like we're an endangered species on the brink of extinction.
So somebody might, just devil's advocate, somebody might be, well, okay, I'm not Rimatush, and, you know, I support the idea, but I don't belong. I don't have lineage to that. So why should I support this group? I'm just going to throw out as one example to that your birthplace or your people's birthplace,
mm-hmm. our ancestral homeland,
is also known as the quarry, or yes. for your particular family,
our village site,
yeah,
yes.
is known as the quarry in Pacifica,
right?
Which right now today you can go walk on soil and see wildflowers and walk to the edge of the cliffs and see the ocean. But if not for the work of Muchiate, among others, that might not be the case already and going forward. So what is Muchiate doing to help Pacifica such that people might want to get on board?
Well, in that area, at the north end of Rockaway Beach, there is a paved trail that the city of Pacifica owns. And so there is public access there. But on either side of that trail is a parcel of land. The two are owned by an out-of-state developer. And it measures about 86 acres of open space that the public currently has access to. And for decades, that area has been under threat from developers for luxury hotels, condos, filling in the quarry with possibly contaminated soil from construction sites. And most recently is a proposal from the property owner of Builder's Remedy to build more than 1,200 residents in that area. And the impact to the community would be substantial. And so Muchiate for quite some time has been showing up at every planning commission meeting, city council meeting, coastal commission. And when it was appealed to the State Board of Reclamation, we also contacted the State Environmental Protection Agency about this issue. So we're advocating for protection of our ancestral homeland. And to your question about why would the community who are not indigenous to the area care about what we're doing besides trying to protect the natural beauty that's here, we also are very inclusive. We just celebrated our 3-year anniversary of our Ramaytush language school, and we have family members and non-natives included in our language school. Also, we host every other month a basket circle workshop out at Tomcat Ranch in Pescadero, where, again, natives and non-natives come together to work together. And recently, one of our elders who passed away to the spirit world just last year had always taught us that so many of our ancestors had died prematurely, that he feels that we now have allies who are coming back, who are relatives coming back in new bodies to help us and to be of assistance to us. And we really couldn't do the work that we're doing without the help of our allies.
Do you feel supported in the community?
Oh, totally. Ever-growing support. It's wonderful. Yes.
Let's talk about support. And just to say, I want to double back to a topic that we've talked about before that maybe is a little sensitive or painful, but we had talked about the El Granada Community Park in the Burnham Strip, and if we, you know, there had been a proposal to give it a
Ramaytush.
I think
that was our first visit.
Yeah.
First time coming together after that.
Right. So
decision.
You had proposed a Ramaytush name, and it didn't ultimately get taken up, and I want to revisit. Mm-hmm. Is there any place right now, a place name that's on a map that has a Ramaytush name? That
not here in this part of the coast, not in the Half Moon Bay area, El Granada area. There are none. We do have one in Pacifica, RMI Point, which is the RMI is the name of the tribal band for that part of the coast. That would include multiple village sites. And actually, for the proposed name of that Burnham Strip Park was Chiguan, which is the tribal band area for this part of this particular part of the coast. But since we've been so focused on the language for several years now, we're actually finding a lot of mistakes in the documentation. And because all of the documentation, you know, some 250 to 300 years ago, was all done by non-native Spanish speakers.
Yep.
So we're finding a super high influence of the Spanish language in the documentation. So I'm having a retreat in just a couple of weeks with the two linguists from UC Berkeley that we have employed to work with us. And we are actually going to focus on correcting the names of the village sites and tribal band areas for the whole peninsula, and then try to translate as many of those as possible. Because what we're finding is that all of the indigenous names are in relationship to the natural world of that location. And so we're hoping that by translating it, it'll give us a better understanding and respect for the natural world that exists here on the peninsula.
Your native language project is amazing by itself. I mean, this is you with the resource conservation and the revival of the cultural heritage, but the language project itself is a major intellectual enterprise as well as a cultural enterprise. A lot of research. Where are you doing this research? At UC Berkeley, local archives? Where do you find this information?
Initially, I enrolled in Berkeley's Indigenous Language Program in 2022, and that is called Breath of Life. And so we hadn't had any native speakers in over 100 years. And so I was the only person on campus studying the language, and the university assigned a doctorate linguistics student to work one-on-one with me to assist me in researching documentation on the language. And we were looking into the archives at the Bancroft Library at UC Berkeley. So that's where it initially started. Since then, Muchiate hired that person who had previous experience in Australia of starting an indigenous language school there with the Aboriginal of Australia. So he had exactly the skills I was looking for. So Muchiate has since hired him, an additional linguist from Berkeley who works with us. And due to their ongoing research, we initially started with just a vocabulary list of about 300 words. And by comparing neighboring languages from the entire San Francisco, Monterey Bay areas and seeing where these are all different dialects of a similar language, so we found that where the northern languages of the San Francisco Bay and the southern languages of the Monterey Bay, where those vocabulary words overlapped, we are then making the assumption that they would have also been used in Ramaytush language. So we've more than doubled the amount of vocabulary words that we started with. And we look to the Chichenyo language of the East Bay to get things like the use of tack-on pronouns and sentence structure and things like that, because we literally just had a list of words.
It seems mind-boggling to me to reconstruct a language that hadn't been spoken in 100 years. And so that's why I just feel like it's such an amazing project. Well, let's talk about Coastside Gives, because mm-hmm. you mentioned you hired this language, so mm-hmm. a linguist. Muchiate is a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the, Crystal, are we up to 77 now? I think I saw, I went to Coastside Gives last night, and it said there was 77...
I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
I haven't looked. But
so we're up to, I'm just going to say that if anybody has the correct information or if that's not correct, 650-477-1244, bring us up to speed. But so Coastside Gives, mm-hmm. which Tay is participating mm-hmm. as they have for the last 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. now. We had the interns look it up. Your goal is 10,000. What else? So the language program. What else are you raising money for on Coastside Gives Day, which is next week, I believe. Next week.
Well,
next
I'd like to thank the community for their donations for last year.
I'm sorry. One second, Kat. When is Coastside Gives? May? Yeah. I thought it was coming right up.
It's the whole week. It's the whole month of April, and the final Gives Day is May 1st.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So you've got time. I know, right? Goodness. You've got time to do this. Okay, right. So I'm sorry. You were saying, what do you?
So last year, we were soliciting donations to help us with a native plant talking circle that we designed and installed at the Heal Farm, which is an educational farm for children.
Yeah, I remember you had a big, you were on the week before, and then you had the big event there.
Right.
And are you doing that again this year?
Well, we're doing a follow-up 1 year later, a ceremony at the site that the community's donations helped to develop. So it's sort of like a one-year update. Come see what we've done with the donations that you've made. And we're planning on having a talking circle ceremony there on April 25th. It's a Saturday from 10 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon.
And how did last year's event go?
Oh, it went really well. I'd say we had at least 75 participants show up we had a land blessing at that time, and everyone had a chance to participate and make an offering to the soil and lay down their prayers and good wishes and make an offering before we started planting. And then we planted a few plants after that ceremony. And then we had a wonderful time with some activities and snacks. And we foraged some stinging nettles, and we had a really tasty nettle soup that we served to everyone. And so we had a really wonderful time last year, and we wanted to show our appreciation and have a 1 year later and thank you to the community on the 25th.
Great. That sounds exciting. Okay, so I know that you're also, you know, big plans, working towards a cultural mm-hmm. heritage center, a headquarters, a location, mm-hmm. you know, where you can come together, where maybe have exhibits or do your research, you know, have facilities mm-hmm. there. How's that coming along?
Well, recently I did have a collaboration with the Coastal Commission about a site at Muscle Rock. The Daly City had put a landfill there, which has, not surprisingly, created an environmental problem.
What?
Ah, surprise.
I never would have thought that.
And so I met with members of the Coastal Commission about that issue because it's also at an ancestral village site there, so it has cultural relevance. It's geologically really interesting because the San Andreas Fault goes to the ocean right there. Within the last decade, someone from Pacifica was hiking in the area, found the skeletal remains of a woolly mammoth there.
Whoa.
It's a wonderful site for whale watching. So my input to the Coastal Commission was, once the city deals with the landfill issue, to convert that site into a park and a possible visitor center to highlight all of these different aspects, wonderful, interesting aspects of that one location. So nothing solid is happening, but we're always advocating for sites to have cultural awareness come.
So I think we've talked about this previously, but how is this happening, Kata? We're already down to like 5 minutes. Frank's giving me the 5 minute fingers there. With the language having not been spoken for 100 years, are there, you know, when you go to like Northern Arizona, I lived there for a while, there's lots of museums and cultural centers that have historical and prehistorical artifacts from the Hopi and the Navajo mm-hmm. and the other tribes that live there. Are there artifacts from pre-contact or post-contact Rimatush culture?
In 1977, the city of Daly City does have some artifacts that were removed from that area, and I would love to see them come back.
So the city of Daly City has them somewhere
yes.
in the boxes in a basement somewhere?
They wow. have a small amount of them on display at the Daly City Museum,
and what
which
about,
I've gone to go see what they have.
What kind of things are there?
A lot of shell and rock type of things. But they had a very small amount on display. I heard there was like 1,000 artifacts that
Whoa.
Were reviewed. So it was very a small amount that was represented publicly.
Wow.
So I'm not sure of everything that was removed, but we would really like to see those come back. But before we run out of time,
yes.
I want to invite the public to another event that we're having before the event at the Heal Farm on the 25th. And that is on Monday, April 13th. We're going to be doing a shell mound presentation right here in Half Moon Bay. And it's going to be at Holy Family Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm.
And they are located at 1590 Highway 1. And it'll be from 7 to 9 p.m. And we're going to do a presentation on shell mounds, which are sacred sites for us that were all around the Bay Areas in this area. So we would like to invite the public. There's no charge. Machiate is hosting this event. And so we invite the community to come and to learn more about what we're doing and our ancestral sacred sites that are just right here locally.
What's that date again?
April 13th for the Shell Mound presentation and April 25th for the Talking Circle ceremony at Heal Farm.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, shell mounds. Those are definitely something that maybe there's some that you can still see around, but I know that that's especially for coastal cultures, shell mounds are a common, artifact. Let's
yes.
just call it artifact
yeah.
that you will see. Well, that sounds very interesting. And Holy Family is just like, it's just south of Cameron's, I think. It's very
yes,
near Cameron's.
It is.
Yes. Okay.
And one more thing I want to mention, our Coastside Gives campaign this year, we're hoping to raise money for an event that we're planning in October.
Oh.
And we're looking at a venue in San Francisco because it's going to be a huge event. And it's going to focus on MMIP, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples, mm-hmm. and the establishment of a new feather alert that was developed by Ron Bonta, Attorney General of the State of California, and Representative James Ramos. So there's a newly established feather alert for when any Indigenous people are going missing, because it's a huge issue that needs more attention.
Okay, that is an important issue. Well, thank you for keeping your eye on that, and hopefully people will donate some money towards that cause. So all month of April?
Mm-hmm.
And then, Frank, what is it? May 1st is
7th.
May 7th is Coastside Gives Day. KHMB does a 12-hour live broadcast on that day. You can tune in. Do you have Kata? Does Luciate have a power hour or a?
Yes, we will have a power hour, but we aren't aware of what that is.
Okay, yet. So stay tuned to this station.
Uh-huh.
As soon as it, let me know when you find out your power hour,
all
and
right.
we'll update people on that.
Okay.
Really, thanks for coming in again. I mean,
always
like I said,
pleasure.
We
got to
get
you.
Some kind of like some kind of trophy or something, and maybe when you get that cultural center, you can just put it in a
yes.
back corner
yes.
somewhere, right? Okay, well. we've had Kata Gomes on from Luciate Indigenous Land Trust. Next week, Crystalline, I will not be here. I'll be somewhere, but not here. Chrislyn will have Betsy Milne. What is Betsy's business again, Chrislyn?
She is the CEO of Home Helpers in Home Care. So if you've got an elder who doesn't necessarily need to, go into assisted living, but just need some help, they do that. Or if you are recovering from, hip surgery or knee surgery, and you just need somebody to help with your kind of day-to-day while you recover.
An amazing business, because the dignity that a person can keep by staying in their own home. Also, I've been in some rehab facilities, and it's even the best ones are not very happy places. So it's been good to be home. So that'll be interesting to hear from Betsy. Okay, and we will be back next week, Chrislyn will, with Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.